November son is very sick, they couldn't sleep last night. Babu Zulu fell on the plane last week, they said.
Well, we know that only men are here today.
That's what the lady is coming with.
We have tritons on that, you know. But we also have a visitor that is coming to meet us all. The documents we asked to be circulated of everybody and received. We have the draft, the strategic plan of the portfolio committee. We also have the opinion from the advocate, Jamie, about the deal that we gave to him. We want to deal with both of them today and see how we wrap up the process. He had indicated that he would be available at 9:50. So we can then delay that part and deal with the one that is in front of us, which is the draft strategy plan. The good thing about the draft strategy plan is that you don't have somebody from outside come and make a presentation. The honorable members should have read the documents given to them because that was the purpose of giving them advance. But we have got the shorter version that has been summarized in three pages with a diagram, which is called the oversight framework for the department, for the portfolio committee. Did anybody see that? Would they have seen it? Did the committee have a copy? Bagu, you've seen it too. Ntebunku, did you see it? The people who have been intimately involved in the actual shaping of the document are sitting on both sides of myself. And I do not want an interpretation from them. I just want an explanation on the things that are structured here. And I will not hesitate to call on the Cordell advisor to give us an explanation.
How do you read? Let the members know how you read.
Okay, good morning, members. We do have a report that emanates from our strategic planning workshop, which is this, this document. It actually kept us the discussions and presentations and discussions from the guests that came to the workshop. It's in two parts. The second part is actually the plan, which is starting from page 31, which mainly the revised strategic plan. And it ends in page 39. And these, I think it's from page 3 pages, is basically a kind of conceptualization of the work that we will be doing, you know, showing our forecast. But it's mainly just a summarized version of what is in this big document. So just to conceptualize the discussion in this. So it's not, even if you don't look at this, the forecast of this one, that will be okay.
Yeah, but what he's saying, or what he's not saying, is that it will not be adequate for you to read the model and not read the bulky thing simply because the model is shorter. You have all the explanations are in the bigger document. This model is merely saying these are the focus tasks of the committee when it goes about doing. Even if you look at the diagram, there is a full explanation in the actual document on that. Now, today, there is no possibility that we will adopt this agreement, because very few people have buried their eyes into it. So the better thing is to give you an opportunity for its adoption next week. You have a week to go through it. If you have any comments or questions, you send us an email, and then we look at them, and then we come back here and do that. Is that agreed?
Agreed, yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chilo and company, we appreciate that. And next week, if people still did not read it, we will go through it page by page, paragraph by paragraph, line by line, so that people have an opportunity to perform their function. The document that Advocate Jamie is going to deal with, if you turn to page this is wrong. But you have to find a way to resolve the problem. So we are waiting for him to explain to us. On section 178.2, he is specific on particular clauses of chapter 4. And he contends that these are arbitrary provisions. And that will not withstand the constitutional scrutiny. If you went to those sections, you would see that some of them are specific for particular reasons. And he deals with a section on section 178.3. He deals with chapter 2, for section 2.2, 7A, 6, and they must be read with 51, subsection 5 and 8, 2B and 14E. And they must also be read with 16B and 10.2 and 22. And it says they are not impermissibly, they are impermissibly vague and will not stand. He did explain what vagueness means in law. He also dealt with the arbitrariness in law. So he will have to help us get out of the problem we got ourselves into. I've asked the lawyers to come here today, Franco, so that even if Advocate Jamie is late, they would have to advise us in their own reading of what the advocate is telling them. Usually the hierarchy in law is such that whatever the advocate says goes. their lawyers comply. But they will have to give us an advice how they read the how they read the sections and the document itself and in their own opinion on what would be. Can they help us as lay people to understand whether they understand him before even he says it or whether they will be at odds with what he said, because they may say, he's off the mark. So I don't know which one will shoot first, whether it will be the parliamentary lawyer, whether the state law advisors, the drafters of bills, or whether it will be the department. They all have a stake in this opinion. Before you do that, be ready, whoever will start. Can I ask the members, what was your first opinion when you read this? What is your opinion when you read the opinion?
I haven't had an opportunity to really read the document thoroughly, I must admit, but I've been reading his interpretation of what his brief is, and I read the conclusion, and I've been flicking through and speed reading parts of it. And what it speaks, what it confirms for me is that there were a lot of questions raised during this process, especially between national, provincial, and local authorities and how they interact and their responsibilities with regard to land use management and spatial development efforts. And he raises these questions, and he says that legislation is not clear enough about defining those different responsibilities. And that's what makes this legislation so technical and so difficult, in that it encompasses all spheres of government, and it's got to be coherent. Otherwise, it could end up having the unintended consequences of this legislation could end up confounding planning, having plans passed, it could delay development. So it's important that we get it right the first time. Thank you.
Everyone who sits in that advocate Jimmy makes a presentation in some kind of bioscope. But we know everybody has got a hard copy of your opinion, so there will be no need for you unless you want it. Yes.
Well, I haven't brought anything which I could use.
That's fine, that's fine. No problem. Everybody has got a copy of your opinion. What we have been talking about is we are explaining to the members that the purpose of being here today would be to interpret for us what your views are on the bill itself and how you think we could rescue this code throw us a lifeline, please. We are under pressure from the house, but we are not willing to submit anything to the house that is flawed and full of defects. Go ahead, Chief.
Members of the committee, as the chairperson has said, you heard my opinion in our copy. I've set out the reasons why I think the bill that's drafted at present won't withstand constitutional scrutiny. I don't intend going through that again because I'm assuming the members have read it. If there are any questions or issues that you wish me to clarify or upon which members of the committee disagree, but questions, I'm obviously happy to take those, but I'm not going to reset the opinion. But if I can just summarize it very briefly, there appears to me to be at least two fundamental flaws in the conception of the law. The one relates, and I've lost both of them in the opinion, the one relates to the interrelationship between the various spatial frameworks which have been provided for. And as you know, those are at national, regional, provincial, and municipal level. The bill in certain respects seems to recognize the particular status for municipal frameworks where it says, for instance, that the decision of the planning tribunal must conform to or give effect to a municipal framework. It has no such provision in respect to other frameworks. But the fundamental difficulty which I've attempted to articulate in the opinion is perhaps twofold. One is there's no recognition of the bill that an entirely separate piece of legislation conceived of in terms of the Constitution and which has been on the stack for a very long time, the Citizens Act, has its own separate discrete provisions for the drawing up of the municipal framework. And those are not given recognition in this bill. So you have two then, you then have two sets of authorizing pieces of legislation giving effect to the same thing. I've tried to spell out in the opinion what the requirements of the framework under the Citizens Act is. And you will note, for instance, that, as you all know, it's meant to be, and the law recognizes that, it's meant to be part of the RDP of the municipality, Integrated Development Program. But more importantly, it is closely integrated with the municipality's budgeting procedures. So in other words, it's only planning for something that it has not and cannot budget for. And that recognition is missing with due respect from the law. But the more, and so that's one fundamental difficulty. There's no indication how these two different pieces of legislation must be reconciled, or even if they can be reconciled. The second fundamental difficulty is the failure of the bill to indicate in clear and, in my view, constitutionally permissible terms how the different frameworks are to be reconciled. And even if one accepts, which I'm not clear that one panel should, that there's a need for all these development frameworks, spatial development frameworks, many of which provide the same thing, like desirable land use patterns. Without a default position which is clear constitutionally compliant, you have a situation where, as many of the comments to the law have said, there's a plethora of planning frameworks and they don't know how. It's all well and good to say all these frameworks are there, all these norms and standards and things, but when you're sitting at the coal face and you're a municipal ICSCO or municipal manager, and you need to give effect to this, the point is how do you do that? And that's a fundamental flaw in the bill, in my view. It doesn't indicate clearly, if at all, how to do that. The second major fundamental flaw in the bill, in my view, is treatment of traditional leaders and traditional custom. The state or the parliamentary law houses have indicated the bill need not go to the traditional national house of traditional leaders in terms of fiction 18 of the governance, Traditional Governance Framework Act. I've given my reasons for disagreeing with that view. But more fundamentally, the purpose of the bill is clearly, it says as much, to extend the operation of municipal planning authorizations and regulation throughout the country, so-called wall-to-wall municipalities, and that will include traditional areas, and that is clear from both. How is it going to do that, given the plethora of laws that there are, and I've researched some of them, still on the statute book, which provide for other processes, forms, tenure, importantly, something the Legal Resources Center commented on, and there are all sorts of things. There's quit-rent tenure, there's leasehold, there's communal ownership. I don't need to tell the members of the committee of the different sorts of rights to land, which our laws make provision for at the moment. And the bill doesn't seem to recognize that. The author doesn't seem to recognize the constitutionally required role, because the Constitution, as I spell out, recognizes customary law and practice subject to amendment by law. And the bill doesn't seem to recognize that. It just provides for incremental increase or improvement in any uncertain service. And to my mind, there could be a far more nuanced and clearly spelled out process to incorporate in a constitutionally compliant manner traditional areas and traditional laws and practices. And unless that is done, we're going to find you would in all likelihood have a challenge from traditional leaders. And then the final, the three points, well, I made that point, the bill must go to the National House of Traditional Leaders. So that is just, that's an overview, an overview of my conceptual difficulties with the bill. I've not, because I've not asked to delve with how the bill can be approved. I thought it would be impertinent for me to do that without being asked expressly for such advice. I hadn't prepared a detailed notes or memoranda as to how I think the bill could be approved. I certainly have a view that I can share with the committee if you so wish to. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Jamie. This is an opportunity for people to ask questions for clarity. And yes, the last part I like, because we want to get out of the situation we are in now. But this is an opportunity for people to ask questions.
Thanks, Jefferson. Thanks, Advocate. I'm so interested in the ending or concluding undertaking that you made, because you would have read many or most of the submissions made by people to this portfolio, and I think many of your findings are corroborating the concerns that many of the applicants had about this legislation, especially these different spheres of government and how they interact. And what we want to avoid, and this bill has been a long time in the making, and it appears that there's been some kind of deafness towards the applications made by various stakeholders. And what we want to avoid is passing legislation that actually has the unintended consequence of slowing down planning and making planning more bureaucratic and difficult to handle. So, Chair, without belaboring the report, the comprehensive report, I would also be most interested in hearing from the Advocate what he proposes we could do to tidy up this legislation, to make it more effective and coherent.
Thank you, Fagu.
Now, Chairperson, I want Coimbra to ask that at least we submit a silence 1 or 2 minutes as a committee. Because I'm also
of the same opinion.
I'm also of the same opinion as UFAR. But I thought we need to meet in 1 or 2 minutes. The caucus of some sort.
And that will be the conclusion after the questions have been raised. Okay. We will deal with that. But let's get all the... Oh, we were saying, before you came, we said, all men today, thanks for coming. Yeah, you were the only woman today. And we were really disturbed when you were still absent. But there's an opportunity for questions. See, let me ask mine just before, because I see people are still looking around. On your conclusion, I have, I'm not a lawyer, so my reading is just in English, not in law. But on your conclusions, you condemn chapter 2, 4, and 6 on the basis of their, you say they do not constitute legislation. I don't understand that as a lay person. I did see where you explained the issues regarding sections and even whole chapters regarding that, but your conclusion is they don't constitute legislation at all.
Sorry, Chairman. I presume you're referring to the last page and the top paragraph 178.1. I'm not saying they don't constitute legislation at all. I'm saying that purposes of those sessions. 44.2 says that the national government can only legislate within the area of provincial, well, within a provincial competence area if it is necessary for one of the purposes set out in that section. And they include economic unity, national standards, and so forth. And that has been, that concept of it being necessary for those purposes was dealt with in the Lickable case. And in that sense, then I'll say it's not legislation for purposes of that section because it's not necessary. 1.41 is the section that provides that national and provincial governments, sorry, national government, I think it is, must support inter-municipal government. And 1.57 is the provision that allows both national and provincial government to regulate municipal government. And in terms of the authorities that I've referred to, again, that is a coordinating, supporting, monitoring function, not a prescriptive function which involves taking over those functions of municipalities. And for reasons in the opinion, I say that it goes beyond regulating, monitoring, supporting, and it's actually prescriptive and intrudes infamously into the area of municipal planning. So in that sense, it's not legislation for the purposes of those sections. But not to say it's not legislation at all. It obviously is legislation, but I don't think it's going to survive the constitutional challenge.
Thank you, Advocate. The last question relating to the same point from me is whether there's any piece of legislation that would capture them, which will comply with what you're talking about, existing legislation. I note that there are court cases that have ruled on those matters, but is there any legislation existent in South Africa that deals with those matters?
Sorry, not with municipal planning, but just with Section 44.2 matters, or what are you referring to, Mr. Chairperson?
If, let's say, the there's a legislation from the national government relating to how, because the constitution stipulates this, but just checking whether there is a legislation that says what you find in the constitution can be undertaken in this way, and they write that in law. Is there any piece of legislation in that effect?
In as far as municipal planning is concerned, the obvious legislation would be the Systems Act and its provisions that relate to social development frameworks. And I would think that is, well, no one's ever challenged it. I've not looked at it specifically for constitutionality, but it's worked thus far. The municipalities found they can regulate their affairs within its provisions. And that would be a good example of regulation, I mean, legislation as contemplated in Section 155 of the Constitution. And 1541 and 24.2 for that matter. So yes, there is. And then obviously in other areas there is legislation which does comply with those constitutional standards in respect to the liquor laws, especially with regard to the liquor law case, insofar as it regulated distribution and national affairs of the liquor trade, it was held to be constitutionally compliant to the extent that it intruded into the licensing regime at local level, it was held to go too far. That really is the basic distinction. So on the same analysis, it would appear to be unnecessary for the bill to drill down to the level it does with regard to municipal tribunals, for instance, and to say how they must be comprised and in minutia to regulate how they operate. It isn't necessary, in my view, on a constitutional approach to have the national legislature, first instance, do that across the board for everyone. There may be a need, and this goes to the question the member asked, about how do I recommend improvements or to make this constitutionally compliant. Now, I must immediately say, I'm aware, obviously, of the concern with regard to time, but it's always more difficult to try to make something that has already been produced better as opposed to starting from scratch. I'm not suggesting this start from scratch, but what I'm saying is for me to sit here, I certainly can't give you the full answer today off the cuff. Simply, I try not to give opinions and advice off the cuff. I'd like to consider it more carefully. But also, this is a complex piece of legislation that needs proper attention. But one of the things that could be done, for instance, in the support monitoring and the other thing that national legislation is supposed to do is to provide for this sort of legislation in the case of municipalities that are not able to provide for it themselves. So where municipalities have capacity, and you've referred to that in my instructions, where municipalities have capacity constraints and issues, yes, they may well be necessary in the constitutional sense to provide for a provincial level tribunals which will operate in those municipalities' area of jurisdiction. But it is entirely unnecessary to do that in the case of major metropolitan areas like Auckland, Schwane and so forth. They have the capacity, they want to exercise their own executive authority, and it's improper for Parliament to want to impose its view as to how a tribunal must operate and how it must be composed and so forth and so forth. And that is especially so when those structures already have their own, in accordance with the Structures Act and the Systems Act, they have their own bodies that do those things. They have their own appeal authorities. There is no reason that I can think, a constitutional reason, why this law should say that Section 62 of the Systems Act will not apply. Why? There doesn't appear to be any particular reason why that should be the case. So it's on those sort of bases that, you know, one would begin formulating a way in which the law could be made constitutional. But that would be the process.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? I'm gravitating towards your proposal, Alpha.
One more question. There are time constraints, but that's not the reason to pass poor legislation. What are the implications to the deadline that's already missed with regard to the legislation? There is existing legislation where provinces and municipalities can continue, but what is the implication of us saying we need to re-look at this whole piece of legislation, and that could mean another 3 or 4 months? What is the consequence of that?
I don't think it has any constitutional consequence, because that has, as you say, already been missed. The June deadline has been missed, and the consequences are what they are, and we all have to live with that. Whatever the status quo was after 17 June this year would be the status quo, as I say, in the opinion, until the new legislation is passed. And whether that takes 3, 4, or more months, Parliament actually can't change that, because you can only act when there is new legislation. So there's no constitutional consequence, it's an undesirable consequence, but then that's been the case for a very long time. There have been these fractured planning regimes. But I would strongly urge the committee of Parliament not to rush in, especially because conceptually the difficulties on the first link that I spoke about, the coordination or articulation of different frameworks, that can be resolved. That's the technical matter. It can be resolved. I just need to understand the conceptual thinking as to why we need the different frameworks. Once I understand that, and the Parliament must make a decision, does it want to maintain those different frameworks? Is Parliament insisting that those are contained in the bill? If so, then fair enough, and then we need to articulate how they coordinate and which trumps which. That is not too difficult a process. The far more difficult process is the incorporation of traditional areas and law and custom into one regime. And the members of this committee would know far more about that than I do. But certainly there would have to be the obvious consultation that has to take place. So the other difficulty I didn't touch upon, but it's touched upon an opinion, is the difficulty of understanding which regime, the Structures Act or the Governance Act, has to govern consultation with traditional leaders, because the bill says both, but the two are not consistent, they're different structures. So that is both a political but also a legal process, because the Constitution gives recognition to the role of customary leaders and custom practice. So obviously Parliament must be aware of that, and you must consider, and presumably will take guidance from the National House of Traditional Leaders, concern is that there needs to be an verdict to this when I first met the chairperson and other members, or we support staff rather. At the beginning of this process, I adverted to the fact that it appeared to me that there would be a necessity, there's a need rather, for a comprehensive audit of all legislation, both provincial and national, that impacts and impinges upon traditional areas and other areas. There's so-called coloured House of Representatives legislation, which is still on the statute book and regulates so-called coloured areas, and probably so-called Indian areas. All that needs to be audited and either needs to be expressly repealed, or there needs to be some provision as to how it's to be dealt with. Because without that, you just leave people in the dock. And then it's not good enough to leave it to municipalities that they can decide how to incrementally improve tenure. Tenure is a fundamental right that people are entitled to. A parliament should, in the first instance, make it clear how that is undoubtedly a national competence. And within the purview of the national parliament to prescribe how it wishes tenure to be upgraded. But the existing plethora of laws just makes it impossible to know what applies where and when. And that needs to be addressed. And that's going to be a far more difficult process from a time point of view.
Okay, we would request your indulgence for this one because the honourable members are asking for a press comment. I know that we have asked the state law advisors, we asked the parliamentary lawyers, the department and people to come and ask questions so that they have clear briefs about what you actually mean here, so that we together would walk the same, this last mile to get to where we need to get. So if you bear with us, please just... No, we're not asking you to leave, we are leaving. We must get everybody out. We must evict everybody. Better than myself. Can he ask you to leave us? I have seen.
I'm saying one thing. If you read this together with Section 41, sub 1, H of the Constitution, whether Council will still be assisting that view, that the opinion is 110.5. There are interpretations based on in 1977 bill of legislation, especially when the bill proposes that certain policy proposal, and what the Constitution particularly deals when we look at older legislation and language that are post-1960s of legislation. There are quite a lot of those that we've heard. Perhaps if we had, even the relationship, this case, the constitutional aspect in terms of how interdependent related yet distinct structure that is imposed on us, we're wondering when the constitution says that municipalities must participate in national and provincial development, council will still persist in certain conclusions reached. And these are the things we're saying. They are not necessarily in terms of evidential facts, but we're saying that the circumstances within which this law is drafted. And when you say that if somebody is sitting in Level Roots, it's Zillas or somewhere else, this law largely regulates the exercise of public power by municipalities. We're not saying that everybody in this field is commercialized, but we're saying that anybody with a measure of competence exercising land use power who has been trained a little bit, 2 year diploma, 3 year diploma in planning or law, anything, would understand that this is how the environment is. When you talk about, when council speaks about land use pattern, you and where council is saying that we cannot have a national land use pattern. Indeed, that is what the European Special Development Perspective has done. That's what the National Special Development Perspective in this country did in 2003. That's what it did in 2006. It needs to be almost neglecting national mandate. If at a national level, we cannot say, the DICC, all the work on six is about talking about indicative license patterns in the country. It does not necessarily contradict a government setting a land use pattern the provincial growth and development strategies, man, provinces, the provincial SDS, they do exactly that. It does not stop the municipality. Planning happens at different scales. They are concentric, they are not necessarily layered in a sense. So the way of saying that if it is that presented to council, perhaps a slight confusion might have been. There are quite a lot of those that we feel that a benefit of engagement or prison will have assisted. And when you look at many of the cases in court, whatever the National Education Policy Act, I mean, the council is saying, for instance, that how can something be different? It is not inconsistent. The computer could define exactly what inconsistency means. Inconsistency in law, Chair, would only arise where compliance with both will lead you to obey one. The fact that you set different objectives, as long as you obey the obedience to one, does not contradict the other one. So they may be different, yet inconsistent. So in planning, you truly will have situations where things are different, but yet they are consistent. And it's in the middle of life, we can keep numerous examples. There are quite a number of those individuals that will feel that, and the system act, for example, Chair, only one line in the middle of the system act, Section 78, Section 70E, the rest, few paragraphs in the regulation. If council will then assist us to say, what would be the relationship between this piece of legislation and a proposed set of regulations, we would then be able to then say that if council will use the regulations for the system act to understand and interpret the system act, why would you not then understand this act and interpret it in line with the regulations to support it as opposed to declaring it vague? There are quite a number of reforms who go on and on and on, but we don't want to sit here being defensive. Here, we'll be guided by yourself, by the law advisors, to seek out to improve the business when you hand to
you. You are indeed in our hands. The off-the-cuff opinion that you have expressed has not changed the opinion of the committee in expressing its own opinion on the opinion. And the committee has taken a view and asked me to ask you, advocate, what advice would you give us in remedying this clause you have taken?
Because you don't expect me to give that advice right now.
Speaker's office for him to give us a go ahead to do that. So remember that you have estimated that there is a possibility of a delay that may even take us 3 months, 4 months. And if that is the case, we would have to go back and ask for permission to do so. If we don't take that advice and go ahead and take Mr. Onrobi's opinion and take this bill to the House, the committee is of the opinion that the financial implication of that is huge as compared to the one that we can spend now in fixing those areas that you have suggested are flawed. But we will work with them. We will work with the legal advisors. We will work with the parliamentary league and people. We will work with the department in fixing the problems. Although the bill is in our entire control now. And it is the the portfolio committee's view that we must take responsibility for fixing whatever is seen to be flawed. So maybe if you would give us as a written advice in whatever time period you have, we will then present it to the speaker, so that the speaker will then give us an advice as to the way forward.
Certainly, Mr. Chairperson. If I could just respond to what the departmental...
I've been noting that you were texting, right? Itching to do so. I would advise, I know you, legal mind, not to do that today.
No. I don't intend being sensitive either. But just, I was mentioning to one of the parliamentary advisors outside that certainly insofar as any advice with regard to how to remedy situation is concerned, it would be helpful to be able to liaise with and be instructed by the department as the proponents of the bill as to what thinking is. Because without understanding what the thinking is, it's difficult to suggest a remedy. With due respect, I don't think it is as important. If there are actual incorrect assumptions in the opinion, then I should be informed of those and I can address those. But generally, laws are regarded or considered for constitutionality on an objective basis. And without, as you say, it's from the point of view of a person who simply has the law in front of them. But if you could indicate whether I could and how that will happen, interact with departments with regard to the further written advice, I'd appreciate that.
They have undertaken to go back to their drawing board and write what they think is their own view about the building. And they will, we will then receive those three pieces and give copies to you. But if you, beyond that, need to interact directly, we will not block you from doing so, even though we as the committee have the responsibility of managing the process. In the meantime, in order for us to be able, maybe let me go back to them. How long do you need? Because if the advocate needs your written submissions before he formalizes the remedies process, he will have to get an indication as to when he will be able to submit them. Can you comment?
Chair, the proposal that we've discussed as a department and which we want to present to you, subject to your views or your ruling, Chair, is that we almost want to control counsel on our side too and present you with certainly views. Posing the same questions to other councils, because we feel that unlike court where you have two sides, we will have one side. We will propose that we also get an independent council to review our position and then probably submit to you as a parliament. But I think we not think about this possibility of responding to the opinion to council itself. But you guide us. Our view is to get independent review of the opinion council.
And a problematic position, because for the purposes of this discussion, we approached the minister. We asked for a joint consultation with the senior council, and he made a commitment he would do so. After a month of waiting for that offer that you're making now, we went ahead, irrespective of whether they were participating. At the end, they can't come around and say they want to go and do that. We will definitely deal with our responsibility to the bill to make sure that it is correct. I'm not stopping them from consulting counsel. I'm saying that we take the responsibility to perform our own function. I wanted to find out from the state law advisors, how long do you need?
Okay, can I just have a second just to speak as a parliamentary advice, because I'm not sure if they will work with us or if we're going to have an independent view on it. If the chairperson wants our view on it, we also, by the end of next week, chairperson, we'll be able to give our views in respect of this opinion. We've got a few issues that we have to work through as well, in respect of the bill.
Start working on how you think we could remedy in terms of what you have written down as an opinion. If they have senior counsel advices, they will submit them to you so that we can then collectively give us a final version of what the deal should look like.
Good.
Thank you very much. We thank you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Yeah, may I be excused then?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Honourable members, you have listened. Fahu, you have listened to the department, you have listened to the state law advisors, and the parliamentary legal person. They all indicate that they need time. In fact, the department even needs time not only to consult among themselves, but also to go to senior council. So it means the road is going to be a little bit longer than we anticipated and more bumpy. But if the consequences are that we should do so because of caution, that's fine. And we have an unanimous view here that the delay of this bill on the basis of caution will be welcome as opposed to submitting something that will be shut down in the House. Remember that this is going to go to the NCOP The NOP is going to restart the process anew, the one that we've gone through. They will also deal with the issue of traditional leaders, the House of Traditional Leaders. We have discussed with them, we have an agreement on that basis. So we do not want to restart the process anew. We want to conclude those parts that have been viewed as flawed, and then take it to the House, and the House will then give it to NOP to conclude. And their process may take 6 months or whatever. It will not be incumbent upon us to dictate to them how soon they should do this. And as Honorable Trollett has asked the advocate, would then the consequences be that there will be in limbo? And he says what has been obtaining from the 17th of June up to now will not change this, it will not be changed by the state. So we're going forward in that basis. I want your last opinion, please, so that we can close. Fargo.
No, I just wanted to find out from the department, because the state law has said that they will be ready by next Friday, if I'm correct.
By the end of next year.
So I think they must also give a time, the department.
I wanted that, but he added an additional complication, because it's not an internal thing. They are going to seek opinion of senior counsel. Senior counsel does research and all other things. Like Advocate Jamie, he said he wanted to employ an advocate, junior advocate, to do his research. We said we do not have the money for that. So the department may have enough money to do so. So let them go ahead. They can't give us the opinion within the stipulated time as the state advisors unless they know who they are going to go to. That's why Pagalenda, unless they know who they are going to go to.
Thank you, Chair. No, I don't think we're in position now. We will talk, the DG is here in his office. Then we will relate to him about the deliberations today, and we should come back to you at least tomorrow to say what we have decided at the department and how soon we can come back to you. So,
you are going to your seniors and let your seniors give us a written response not later than end of next week. Thank you very much. No, he understands English. You study. He speaks pure English. That's better than we have all agreed that by next Friday we will get all the written submissions for the advocate to peruse. For our own purpose, next Wednesday, we must conclude the strategic plan. That would be in the agenda. We also would want to get to the department through the DG via Pumla together to give us their quarterly report so that we table it in the next meeting as well. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.